Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app right now or visit wynnbet.com to start winning. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Casual Friday, Talking Buffalo podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. As always, look, I got a lot of stuff that I want to get into today. I got my buddy, as always, Joe Yurden. One quick programming note, by the way, before we get going today. So we do Casual Friday. Next week's Thanksgiving. I've already talked to Joe. It's going to be Casual Wednesday. We're not going to bother doing an episode on Friday. People are going to be Black Friday shopping and hungover and sleeping in and all kinds of shit like that. Not in their normal routine. So it'll be Casual Wednesday next week. But anyway, what's going on, dude? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I cannot believe it's Thanksgiving next week. It's
crazy.
By the way, I'm at a loss. I cannot believe we are at the point where it's like that. I mean, I should understand because it is getting colder out, and people who yell about hating that we like fall are getting mad because it's still fall and it's cold. But it's like, geez, did you check where you live?
Did you reap what you sow, man? I told you. Fall's not a leak to me. I've told you that from day one. That's been my take.
Listen,
it's cold already, man.
I am not affected by this in any way. I like it. I love it. The other day when it was 55 and raining out was unnecessary, but like the warmth is fine, but like, nah.
I'm legit cold already, Joe. I've already went.
You've been cold for 3 weeks. Are you kidding me?
Well, last month I got two winter jackets. And this past week, I got winter boots, which is something I have not done. And I don't even know. Even when I lived here, I never had boots. But I went out. I already got some winter boots. I got some skull caps, some gloves, and a scarf are coming soon. It's already cold.
And you went soft. You went soft so fast. My goodness.
Well, I wasn't that much of a tough guy to begin with. But yeah, I admit it, man. My blood's thin, dude. It is what it is. Anyway, all right. So look, I got a lot of stuff that I want to get into today. I originally wanted to do, I'm still am going to do some Buffalo Bills midseason awards. I'll get to that in a minute, but we're going to kind of fly through that because there's other stuff I want to talk about before that though. So as everyone knows who listens to Joe or follows him on Twitter, he has his own Substack now, Noted Hockey. And I've listened, and it's funny saying that when it's a literature site, but I've listened to you did a piece on Cody Eakin, did it a couple days ago. I enjoyed it, man. I got to say right off the top here, man, and for people who might not have subscribed yet to Noted Hockey, do that, of course. But your site is, if you want to read it, you read it. But if you're not reading, you can listen. And that's what I'm talking about. Like sometimes I sit down and I read your stuff or I read other people's stuff. I like to read. You know what I mean? I do enjoy reading. But sometimes either I don't want to read, quite frankly, or I got other stuff that I want to do. So in the case with your Cody Eakin piece, man, I was in the kitchen, opened up my phone, got to your Substack, and there's an option to listen. It's like an audio version of your story, narrated, of course, by you, which is really cool, man. And, you know, I've told you many times, I think you got an excellent voice for radio and narration. So that part is really cool. And anyway, I pressed play and I listened to your story while I was doing some dishes and stuff around the kitchen, man. I really think that's it's a very handy option, man. I like it a lot. I like what you're doing with that.
Well, I've seen a few like big sites do a text to speech way of doing their stories, because I think I want to believe they're doing it for accessibility reasons, which is also the reason why I'm doing it. Because I know there are a few people that do follow me on Twitter who are hard of sight. And they do struggle with reading it. So I just want to make sure that there is an option to be able to listen to it. And honestly, I've had enough people telling me that I got to do a podcast, or I got to do something, you know, speaking wise. I got to put my voice to use in some way or other. I don't think they mean like politically speaking either. I think it's just like, no, dude, you sound good. Just use that more.
Yeah.
So I figured it was worth doing, and also for me to get back on the horse and editing audio and learning how to, you know, playing around with, because I use Audacity to record. So I figured it's worth doing just for that, because when I do a podcast, it's coming. One is coming. I will say that now. That's my tip off. One is coming.
Nice.
But I wanted to be able to play around with the program so that I can like put music to it, you know, have a lead in, do the fade, you know, do the crossfades and all that crap. So wanted to make sure I could at least put it together in a way. Now, granted, this is what I do for this is way easier because it's just me talking to the microphone, recording it, and then clipping it, cutting out parts where I'm just like making different noises that I understand that I now make when I do speaking.
Little because ticks. We all have.
Oh my God. Oh my, it drives me nuts. Like I hear it, I'm just like, geez, stop doing that. And then I catch myself doing it while I'm reading and I'm just like, oh, let's not. Can we not do that? And then like, and now I'm getting to the point where I'm like picking out different things that I hear. Like I could hear my computer fan going. Now, granted, I didn't hear it really going too bad. I might be able to hear it now, but just the way the computer hums, I could hear it more in the background this last time around. I was like, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So Then I got to play around the setting to get rid of the background noise and shit like that. So like, it's fun to do that. And honestly, if it was a huge pain in the ass, it'd probably make me not want to write a whole lot, because then I'm going to be like, oh God, I got to write. Oh God, I got to read it too. I don't want to do that. But like, no big deal.
Hell, it's man, if you write a long enough article, it could literally be a podcast, you know, amount of time it takes you to do the audio version and stuff. I just really like it. Like I said, sometimes I'm sitting down, I'm in the mood to read. I'm at my desk and I'll read something. Sometimes I just, I'm on the move and I want to know what you're saying or what you're writing, but to be able to listen to the audio version of what you wrote on paper is, it's a really cool option, man. I think it's really handy. I really do.
I just figure if I'm making my own content, I got to make as much as I can for people to make it easier. Now, I don't know how well it sounds me reading off statistics, especially stuff with decimal points and shit like that. But like, I try to at least have fun with reading it off. I don't want to do a straight read with it. I want to make it entertaining to listen to as much as I can. So I try to, I don't want to say ham it up, but like,
I was going to say that too, because you're certainly when listening to Cody Eakin, when you're not mailing it in, you know, like I could sit here and write out an article, for an example, and I sound fucking robotic the way I would sound, you know, talking about, but like you do have, your narration of your words is, emphatic, man. You know what I mean? You punctuate a lot of stuff. It's fun to listen to is what I'm saying. It's not boring. It's not robotic. A lot of times when you hear like an audio version, like I know like Buffalo Rumblings, a lot of these SB Nation sites, anything they put out, you can also read it, but it sounds like Surrey basically is reading it. You know what I'm saying? So you bring some energy to it. It's a lot of fun, man. I like it. So again, everyone, go check it out. Noted Hockey, Joe Yurden, Substack, subscribe right now. All right. Look, football, we'll circle back to hockey because I do want to talk some Sabres. Football, man, a couple things. First of all, has this season felt a little off, like not as entertaining? Like it hasn't been fun as much this year for me. I don't know why. It's been unpredictable, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. I mean, every week a shitty team is beating a supposed powerhouse. Some people like that. I don't know. I kind of like having a couple dominant teams. Like there's no team this year in the NFL that's a standout team. There's no one team that is head and shoulders above anyone else. I don't even think, you know, we like to do tiers. I do tiers all the time. My chicken wing power rankings are literally tiers. I'm not even sure there's any number one tier teams this year. Like, let's start with number two, like second tier teams. I don't think there's any number one tier teams. There's no standout MVP candidates yet. It's a bunch of people. It's kind of like I think the MVP race right now, and again, we're at the halfway point of the season. It's kind of like a golf tournament where like there's 15 guys in the field that were within two shots of each other. And again, you could say that's exciting. But for me, I don't know, man. I like to see a couple guys really be head and shoulders above the rest, a couple teams be head and shoulders above the rest, not getting it. And again, that, the officiating, too many games are being decided because of bad calls, or at least heavily influenced because of bad calls, and just a lot of sloppy football. I don't know if it's because there's an extra week. I have no idea. I don't know if COVID's a factor. But yeah, I mean, you got teams like Jacksonville beating Buffalo. You got Tennessee losing to the Jets. You got Tampa losing to Washington. Every week there's a scrub team that beats a good team. Like, what's been your take so far on this NFL season?
It's made me think back to back in the day when, you know, when leagues started putting salary caps and stuff into place because they didn't want to have dominant teams anymore. Because, you know, basically the equation was you spend money, you win championships. Like, okay, you know, I get that. But at the same point, parity is gross. Like, parity, they're like, oh, it makes everything even, makes it all unpredictable. It's like, parity makes everybody mediocre.
Yeah.
In my mind. Like,
I agree.
You don't have... Like, to have a team that did what, you know, Bills fans don't want to hear this, but to have a team that did what Kansas City did a couple of years ago is wild now to see that. A team that just goes, you know, runs all over everybody and you're just like, well, they're going to win. You know, if somebody beats them, it's an honest to God shock. Like, I know some people thought last year was a shock, but like, you know, it really wasn't considering, you know, all the problems that Kansas City had going into that game. But for some reason, you know, I always think, you know, maybe this is just nostalgia because, you know, we're, anybody my age or your age or even just maybe even slightly younger than me has that memory, you know, where nostalgia is a big influence on how our opinions of current standards. And I think back to the 90s when it was, you know, the NFC, you know, being an NFC team fan, and you know, it was always the Cowboys, Niners, the Packers, the Giants every once in a while, Washington sometimes. And that was just like, that was just how it was. It was going to be one of those teams winning the NFC. And you're just kind of like, it stinks. I want to see somebody else do it. It's like, well, if somebody else gets to be on that level, cool. I don't want the other teams to get watered down to the point where it's like, boy, all these teams kind of suck. I don't really enjoy this. I think this year's it's complete parity because everybody's got a fatal flaw, at least one fatal flaw.
Absolutely.
And it shows its face every few weeks where you're just kind of like, you're thinking like, oh, geez, they're going to run all over these guys. And then, oops, nope, they didn't. You know, just that Buffalo Jacksonville game where, you know, Buffalo is a 2-touchdown favorite and they, you know, lose a gross game like that. And you're just like, I don't understand how that happens. It's like, well, there are obvious reasons why that happened. But when it's like this and it's so unpredictable, I mean, I'll take it back. For 31 teams, it's very unpredictable. For one team, it's extremely predictable.
I know where you're going with this.
I'm not going any further with it.
Well, there's no 0-17 in their future, at least.
They should have won that game. They missed an extra point. An extra point. I can't get going.
I thought of you. Of course, everyone, Joe's referencing.
People are like, oh, tie, that's what's deserved. I go, no, it's not. They should have won the game, but the
Joe's a Lions fan for everyone
missed
out
an
there.
Extra point. Jackass. And then he kicks a 48-yarder, which I know in Pittsburgh, that into the stadiums, into the wind, but he missed it short. Are you kidding me, dude? Come on. Get lost. But anyway, but everything is just like, everybody's in the muck. Like, there's nobody that's rising above it. Everybody's in the muck and everybody's got at least one flaw where you're just like, boy, if that other team can expose them there, they're in trouble. And I think we know what the Bills' problem is. I think you can look at every team and figure out what their big problem is or where it exists. And that's, I don't know if there's comfort in that. I don't think there's a whole lot of comfort in that because it just makes you nervous about everything. I mean, and like, God help you if you're a gambler. Good luck being a gambler trying to figure this stuff out because I want to see what spread records are for teams because I got to think Vegas has got to be losing their mind on some of this stuff.
Probably. And look, even if you don't agree, I completely agree with you for the record. I don't enjoy parity either. I don't want all 32 teams even. I like having powerful teams. And then when there is an upset, it means a little more, you know. But anyway, even if you don't agree with that and you say, well, I like every team being even, beyond that, I'm not one of those guys who, I mean, I'll bitch about a call during a game like everybody else, but I'm not one of those conspiracy guys. And I'm not one of those guys who thinks that 9 out of 10 times officiating, you know, a bad call might affect a drive or something, but ultimately the game being decided because of officials, I really don't like that. I don't blame games on refs. Usually if the Bills lose 9 out of 9.5 out of 10 times, it's because of something they did. It's not because the refs screwed them. But the officiating this year has been as bad as I can ever remember it. And COVID is also watering down teams in the league. I mean, if you're a Packers fan, you have Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams before that. And that leads into the Buffalo Bills right now, because it is, we're taping this, as we tape this, I don't know, it's like mid-afternoon on Thursday. We don't know the status yet of his vaccination. I'm talking about Spencer Brown, of course. But as everybody already knows, Spencer Brown was put on the COVID list, and that is a big blow. I can't believe that I'm saying it's a big blow when this guy was drafted in the third round and wasn't even supposed to start this year. But nonetheless, he has become a starter. He's becoming a very valuable starter. He makes the offensive line better, significantly better, I think. And he's out with COVID. We don't know if he's vaccinated or not. It's very likely. People I've talked, the sentiment is people don't think he's vaccinated. He's likely not vaccinated. If that's the case, he's definitely out Sunday against the Colts. And he's definitely out next Thursday on Thanksgiving night when the Bills play the Saints. That's a big, big blow to the Bills, man. The offensive line without him is a mess. We saw that in Jacksonville. So you got Spencer Brown likely out for Sunday with COVID. Star Lotulelei is still not back. I don't think he's going to be back for Sunday. And then on the physical injury part, Tremaine Edmonds is still not practicing. He's very likely not going to play on Sunday. Matt Milano is in a red non-contact jersey during practice on Thursday. Very limited. Good chance he might not play. The Bills are in a lot of, what I'm getting is this. DeForest Buckner is one of the best offensive tackles in the NFL. And man, the thought of Cody Ford possibly being back in at guard is very scary. I don't know if they do that. I don't know if they put Darrell Williams, leave him at guard and try Ryan Bates at right tackle. I don't know. But point being, the offensive line's a mess. The defense would start. I mean, it didn't matter against the Jets, but the Indianapolis Colts are better than the Jets. And now without potentially Milano and Edmonds at linebacker, dude. And a game next week, I hate to say this, don't kill the messenger, and I know they're going to, but the Bills legitimately could be looking at 6-5 right in their face 8 days from now. They're 6-3 now. They could be 6-5 in 8 days, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, they could. They could. And going back to the point on Spencer Brown, I've said this the last couple of weeks with friends and talking about this, and they stress the point. Like, he's so important to the line. They need him. And I'm like, you don't realize what you're saying right now. What you're saying is your team was put together poorly. If a third round pick is vital to your offensive line success.
Yeah.
You know, I get wanting continuity. I understand continuity is a big thing for O-lines. I get it. And you want to have the same guys because they work together team. You know, I get that. Like, offensive line's the only real unit where, like, that's the actual case where you need that, where it's really good to have that. But when you got a new guy who's plugged in there, and I don't even know if he started the season at right tackle. I don't know if he was, or if he came in and then it was just like, oh, he's actually really good. He's better than what we have. Let's go. But if you're missing him, and that's the linchpin to your offensive line, you had big problems there that you were just ignoring.
He didn't start the season. He was going to be a swing tackle coming off the bench. The problem was Cody Ford was so horrible at right guard. They ultimately moved Darrell Williams from right tackle to right guard. And Darrell Williams played good at right tackle last year, but the guard play was so bad, they swung him inside and gave Spencer Brown a shot. And he has looked really, really good, man. It's just, it's going back to the summer. If you remember, Sean McDermott is usually very bland, very vanilla, doesn't say much. He was very outspoken about his players getting vaccinated and that it's a competitive advantage. This is proof. We're seeing it. Teams like Green Bay that, you know, again, even though they won without Devontae Adams in Arizona, but still, you know, Aaron Rodgers missed a game that they probably win if he plays last week. Star Lotulelei, who didn't even play last year because of COVID, who opted out, didn't get vaccinated. I don't want to get into whatever specific. Yeah. I have no idea what the hell's going through his mind. He hasn't talked about it, so I'm not going to put thoughts in his head here behind my microphone. But anyway, he's out, and Spencer Brown's out because of COVID now. And it is a, it's a competitive disadvantage now for the Bills. Sean McDermott was 100% right, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how more obvious it could have been. And now I think we're in a weird spot now with COVID because we've been dealing with it for so long that now players who were vaccinated earlier now need boosters. And maybe if they don't get the boosters, now they're getting infected. So it's like, okay, like that's, in a sense, it is like the flu where you do need to keep getting your shots, you know, periodically every year, every 9 months, whatever it is. And they said that from the get-go. But if Spencer Brown isn't vaccinated and, you know, based on some of the, you know, the Twitter likes that I've seen pop up on Twitter, not feeling good that he's vaccinated.
Right.
But I mean, like, but to go back to about what McDermott said, like, yeah, it's a competitive advantage to get your shots. And like, to avoid anything like this happening, you had to do it. And instead, it's just kind of like, if you miss a game or two, what's the big deal? Like, well, the big deal is if you miss a game or two, somebody else in the room gets it, then they miss a game or two. And somebody else in the room gets it, then they miss a game or two. So you're going week to week to week with a different guy getting cycled out because, oops, got COVID, you know? And who knows, you know, where down the line that stops, like with certain guys, like, because, you know, they made the Bills were, you know, they stressed how like they were 80% vaccinated or whatever it was. And like, that's cool. But out of like a, you know, a 53 man roster, I'm not even going to try to do math, but like, that's a still good number of dudes that ain't got the shots that run the risk of missing games. And that may, you know, not to mention like all the stuff, you know, practices and crap like that, but man, oh man, like you don't want to put yourself down without, you know, in something that was very easily addressed, very easily fixable. And that's the spot that they're in. If Brown is unvaccinated, which I mean, hey, maybe he is, and he just likes to crow about it for political reasons. Like, who cares? Like, if that's your case, fine, keep being phony. But if he's not and he's just doing that and he's just kind of like, yeah, well, I don't need that because whatever. Cool. Well, congrats. If you're 6-5 after the next two games, have fun dealing with a now hulked up Patriots team that now has a lot of confidence who might be ahead of you at that point. Who knows? You don't know. Like, we don't know how it's going to work.
Yeah. Look, man, too. And there's a lot of people who are still uninformed and they're going to say, well, people are vaccinated or still getting COVID too. And they're right. I mean, that's not wrong. They're right. But if you don't know the difference, let me explain to you quickly here. Let's just take Spencer Brown and let's say he is vaccinated. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he has COVID now. If he has no symptoms, say he has no symptoms come tomorrow, Friday. Friday, people are listening to this. We're taping this Thursday. If he has two negative tests in 24 hours, he'd be able to play. So he would be able to play. If he was vaccinated and he has COVID and nobody's heard from him yet as we tape this anyway, and he's asymptomatic, because that happens a lot. A lot of people get COVID and they don't have symptoms. He has two negative tests 24 hours apart. That's what it is. 24 hours apart, two negative tests. So he could test on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. and be negative, and then test again Sunday at 9 a.m. and be negative. Unlikely, but it could happen. Again, if you're asymptomatic, he'd be able to play. Or at the very least, he certainly would be able to play next week. If you're unvaccinated, the protocol is in the NFL, minimum 10 days. So if he's unvaccinated and he's chilling right now and he feels great, don't matter. He ain't playing Sunday, and he ain't playing next Thursday against the Saints either, if he's unvaccinated. I just want to throw that out there. Then the other thing, and you kind of alluded to this, and it annoys me, man. A lot of people who use the mega stuff and, you know, freedom and this and that and all that other bullshit and won't get vaccinated for that reason. Dude, the leader, Donald Trump and most of these Republican fucking leaders are all vaccinated. Mm-hmm. They're all vaccinated. So I don't even know where this shit comes from, man. These guys who are, you know, the mega guys, and you're talking about Spencer Brown, a lot of the likes. I'll talk about a lot of the Trump shit that he likes and stuff, this and that. Donald Trump's vaccinated. A lot of these guys, a lot of these biggest Republicans, the ones who talk the most shit, are vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yeah.
I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated, Joe, I'm frustrated because of the football side. Again, I really don't give a shit what anyone does in their personal life until it affects me. And I guess as a Bills fan, it affects me. It does. And it certainly, who cares about me or gives a shit about what you think or being a fan, but it affects your team. That matters because mm-hmm. you're not getting vaccinated and it directly affects the team. The Colts are a dangerous football team.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Colts are a dangerous team if the Bills are healthy. No Spencer Brown, potentially no star Latulele, no Jermaine Edmonds, potentially no Matt Milano. I know they're still going to be favored. I don't even think the Bills should be favored this game anymore. And then they got to go on the road next week. Like I said, unpopular opinion. A lot of people don't want to hear this, and I hope I'm wrong, but mm-hmm. we could be having this while we're doing casual Wednesday. If we were doing a normal casual Friday next week, we could be talking about the Bills being 6-5.
It's very possible.
Remember when I told you to don't count? Remember when I told you don't count New England out? Count New England out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't know if teams are going in playing against them and thinking like, Bloom's going to come off the rose at some point. Not yet. I mean, they have flaws, but it's still Belichick in charge, and he knows how to dip around those flaws. Like he knows what to do there. And as far as the Colts being favored over the Bills, I wouldn't go that far, but that line is a lot closer than you'd expect for a team that scores as many points as the Bills do. That's for sure.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
All right, originally in my notes that I have for today's show, I wanted to do Buffalo Bills midseason awards, even though because of the stupid 17-game season, it's not technically, I guess, the midpoint. Like, we probably should have done this at halftime in the last game. That would have been the actual midseason part. But, again, the COVID stuff came up, and we had to spend some time talking about that. I do still, and I mean literally want to fly through these. I have some... Bills midseason awards, good and bad, prepared. I'm going to throw them out there. We'll fly through most of them. Maybe I'll get a thought or two from you along the way, see if you agree or not. And then we'll talk Sabres and we're going to do our starting five draft, of course, like we do every week. I'm just going to jump right into it. So these are best and worst. Bills midseason awards. Worst game, Jacksonville. They lose 9-6. I mean, come on. There's no explanation mm-hmm. either. Let's just skip that. Best game, and I think you agree with this too, was the Kansas City game. 38-20, yep. They beat them Sunday Night Football. We talked about this on the show. I think it was important for the Bills not just to win that game because of the standings and getting the W, but because they needed to mentally get over that hump, knowing they could beat mm-hmm. Kansas City. And it was one thing if they would have beat them by a field goal, like 24-21, but they kind of kicked their ass. And I think that really puts them on another level mentally, knowing that they could beat them in the playoffs. I'm sure you agree with that. Here's where, and this is, I'm laughing because Rookie of the Year, guess who I have down right now? Spencer Brown.
Yeah.
I have Spencer Brown as my rookie there. I mean, a lot of people might say Gregory Rizeau, first round pick, and he did make some good plays mm-hmm. as well. But Spencer Brown clearly makes his offensive line better. And he looks like a future stud. In fact, he kind of looks like a stud right now, man. Mm-hmm. He started four games. It's not going to be five because of COVID, but he started four games this year. The lines look good. We saw what happens conversely when he's not there. that Jacksonville game, it was just hideous, man. It was terrible.
Even that Pittsburgh game, it didn't start the Pittsburgh game. Pittsburgh game was the line got blown up in that game too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, man, it was first game of the year, but like still.
No, you're right. And again, Gregory Rizzo, he probably might be the more popular choice. I mean, he's played with 3 sacks, had that interception on Mahomes. That was a really nice play. He's got 5 tackles for a loss. Going through the stats here, he deserves consideration, but I feel like he's kind of slowed down lately, where Spencer Brown has ascended and he's made this entire offensive line better. So I had Spencer Brown as my rookie of the year. Most pleasant surprise, I got Mitch Morse, the center. And he didn't look good last year. He wasn't healthy last year. Many thought he could be cut or should be cut to save money. He's been the only one on this offensive line this entire year who's been consistent. Deion Dawkins has been very up and down. We've talked about that. Darrell Williams has not played as well as he did last year. Feliciano's been terrible. Cody Ford, I mean, what are you going to say? You know, Spencer Brown hasn't played enough to be considered consistent this year. Mitch Morse has been consistent as hell. So I have him as my most pleasant surprise. And then I had Gregory Rizzo as like an honorable mention. Again, he was a first-round rookie. Joe, I remember we talked about it a little bit, and we heard a lot from a lot of experts. He was like a project. He wasn't expected to do much. A developmental guy, so to speak, even though he was a first-rounder. But he's been an impact player at times. So I have him on the list. Mario Addison, I think, has played pretty well this year. I thought he was washed up. Dawson Knox, he's been an important asset to this offense when he's been healthy this year. That was surprising. It's funny. I go back to taping a podcast with Perino and Nate Gary at Mulberry, and we were talking about Dawson Knox being a red flag going into camp, and he was literally sitting at the table next to us. I talked about that on the show before. But you agree. I like Mitch Morse. He's been a pleasant surprise this year to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't – offensive line is funny because I look at it as like defensemen in hockey. Like if I don't know your name and I don't know that you're there, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know? Like if things are quiet and the quarterback's got time and running backs have got lanes and whatever, like whatever you need them to do, they're taking care of business. You don't know that they're there.
Yeah.
Unless they're like pancaking everybody, then it's like, shit, they're killing everybody. Yeah. That's cool.
Especially your center. If your center, they're mentioning
centers are very ignored.
He missed a block or he fumbled, a bad botch snap to Josh Allen or something like that. It's the only time you'll usually hear Mitch Morse's name. But yeah.
Another guy I'd throw in there is Ed Oliver. I think Oliver's had a really strong season. I mean, Stars, he needs Star next to him. But I think Oliver's had a lot more big moments. Big tackles for loss, sacks, what have you. I think he's had a really nice, I know everybody's like kind of waiting for him to have a dominant season, but I think he's had a really nice season to this point.
I'll reply to that in a second because I have him listed with another award. All right. Uh-oh. So we said most pleasant surprise, biggest disappointment is definitely for me, Cody Ford. I mean, he came in healthy this year after the injuries. We thought the injuries were the problem last year. He's had every opportunity in the world to win and keep that starting guard job, and he hasn't gotten it done, man. I'm not going to sit here and bash him as a human being, as a person. He's probably a really good guy, man, but I don't know if it's physical limitations. I don't know if it's mental problems. I don't know what it is, but he's not the answer at guard. He's going to be gone after the season. And the fact that it's very likely that if Spencer Brown won't be playing, if they move Darrell Williams back to guard and take another chance and they move 2 positions around, because that tells you how bad they don't want Cody Ford in there. That's an indictment on him. The punter, Matt Hawk deserves consideration, but dude, I just don't fucking care enough about a punter to call him the biggest disappointment.
If you didn't say his name, I was going to.
Yeah, he's been a disappointment.
It's noticeable. He's bad.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be, I knew he wasn't a boomer, but he was supposed to be like this guy who was really good at directional punting and pinning guys deep, and where is that shit? I haven't seen it, but he's a punter.
I guess he's a really good holder, though. So I guess that makes the difference between him and Bohorquez.
Tyler Bass has been great kicking the ball. And then one other guy, too, is F.A. Obada, but I really don't think it's his fault. There was a lot of hype on him this summer, but he just really hasn't had the opportunity. So that was the biggest disappointments. Then I got my unsung hero. And for me, this was pretty easy, at least. Levi Wallace. I'm gonna say this again. He is the weak link of the secondary, but he's only the weak link of the secondary because of how amazing the rest of the secondary is. You got Jordan Poyer, you got Micah Hyde, arguably the best safety tandem in the NFL. Trey White's a Pro Bowl corner. Taron Johnson's become one of the best nickel corners in the NFL. He just got a nice extension. Nobody. So yeah, Levi is the weak link. It's just because of how good everyone else is. You know, mm-hmm. He's had two interceptions. He's played well. He's earning himself a really nice payday. It's going to be an interesting decision this offseason for Brandon Bean, because Levi Wallace re-signed last year for only 1 year and $1.2 million. Ain't going to be the same this time around. Mm-mm. He's played well this year, and he's kind of went under the radar because he's one of those guys that fans, at least they used to like to kind of pick. You got to pick out somebody, right? Mm-hmm. So it would be Levi Wallace. I think he's been really, really good this year.
Yeah. And you know what? For corners are costly. So if he, you know, if somebody comes calling and they want to give him a lot of money, okay. Hey, thanks for your service. Good luck. Yeah. Good luck to you. You know, because if he's the man somewhere else, it might be a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Honorable mention too. You talked about Matt Hawk holding. Well, Tyler Bass, I think he's been awesome kicking them. 19 of 20 for field goals, all 29 of his extra points. So he's been an unsung hero. You know, you don't spend a lot of time talking about the kicker, but he's been a significant role. I got best and worst offseason transactions, and they're both re-signings to me. I think the best one was re-signing Matt Milano. I thought most of us thought he was going to be gone and he was going to get this huge deal somewhere else. He ended up, I think it was like 4 years, $44 million. He re-signed before free agency even started. I think it was a really good win for Bean. I know he's injured again, but that's been the concern with him, and it is kind of rearing his ugly head. But when he's out there, which has been most of the season, I think he's played at a level at linebacker on par with the best linebackers in the NFL. He's been that good to me. So I'm glad he's back. I think that was a great re-signing. Conversely, the worst, re-signing John Feliciano. They gave him 3 years, $14 million. Forget about the money. Who gives a shit about the money? But by re-signing him, what they did is they said they were content with the interior offensive line. And I think that was a big mistake. They didn't draft any guards. They didn't sign any significant guards in free agency. And John Feliciano has not played well. He didn't play well before the injury. He's been on injury reserve. He's going to be coming. He could come back. He's eligible to come back against the Saints next week. I think, you know, the interior line is going to be a top priority, maybe the top priority in this offseason. You know, for all Brandon Bean's hits, and he's had a lot of them, the way they've handled their guard position with trading Wyatt Teller, cutting Quinn and Spain, who both are really good now. It's been a sore spot for the Bills. And I didn't love the John Feliciano resigning at the time, and now I really hate it. So
yeah. With Teller and Spain though, was that them just not being patient enough for him, or they were just kind of like, yeah, whatever, we can lose him?
Well, I don't know. It's a great question. They didn't know what they had in Wyatt Teller because he wasn't even really playing much before they traded him to Cleveland.
Now when he did play, he seemed to commit a lot of penalties. I recall. I can get it, but also like I don't know, maybe get a better
itchy trigger. I guess I don't know, but all I know now is he's one of the best guards in the NFL. He just got a mega deal, and Quinton Spain has been really good with the Bengals. He's a weird case. I don't know what it is with him. He earned an extension. He was a starter. He got benched. I think there might have been some locker room stuff. And then next thing you know, he's cut. But anyway, point being, John Feliciano to me wasn't the answer. They could have done better. I didn't like that signing. Best and worst plays. All right, best play to me, that Kansas City game, that 35-yard touchdown pass, Josh Allen on a rope to Emmanuel Sanders. Yep. Absolutely perfect throw. The previous drive, the Chiefs had taken a 10-7 lead, and I'm, you know, early second quarter, started to get a little concerned. Josh got the ball back, and he just threw a perfect pass to Sanders, touchdown. Mm-hmm. And from there, the Bills went on. They never lost a lead again. They won. That was the best play. Worst play, I think this one's kind of obvious. Josh Allen slipping a little bit on that 4th and inches in Tennessee. Yeah. You know, if that doesn't happen, they win that football game. You know, they probably, or I shouldn't say for sure, they very likely win that football game.
The interior line of that play failed very miserably.
They did because
the D tackle was there, right? Was almost there waiting to grab Allen. So,
and so we're clear. So I'm not hypocritical because we talked about this that following Friday. I didn't hate the play call. I liked going for it. And I did not, I liked the sneak call to Allen. It was just the execution. So it was the worst play. This guy you talked about, my best development of the season is Ed Oliver. I think he's starting to develop into a star player. He's been a standout the last couple weeks, and he's playing at a level now that I think a top 10 pick should. Now, he's not ever going to be a big stats guy. He's never going to have 9, 10 sacks. And I think stats could be overrated. But you want to see some numbers, some impact plays from a top 10 pick. And he's just been like so-so early on for me in his career. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been all right, but then he disappears. I think you're starting to see this year, and especially, again, over the last month or so, and I'm glad you brought him up. He's playing like a defensive tackle that can impact the game with mm-hmm. game-changing plays. Yeah. He's my best development.
And like being an interior D lineman like that, it's not always about like just being like a standout super guy. I mean, like I think of a guy like Ndamukong Suh when he was with Detroit, and like he was the focus of that line because, you know, they didn't have a whole lot else. I mean, they had, the line was okay, but like Suh was such a focus because he was a maniac and he was, you know, he's stepping on guys. He's like, he's just being a jackass. But man, oh man, I think back to that playoff game against Dallas. He was the one dude that was in Tony Romo's face the entire game. And it was like not even just like, you know, getting sacks or whatever, just putting pressure on, blowing up the line, doing whatever. Ed Oliver's doing a lot of that same kind of stuff, just without, you know, 15-yard penalties of, you know, and stepping on guys and creating controversy. He's blowing dudes up, he's getting in the backfield, and he's causing problems. And that's what you need your inner line to do. Like if you can cause problems there, you can make it easier for your ends to get around.
Yeah, and a lot of people would say Star Lotulelei is the reason why he's playing better, but he didn't play again against the Jets. He didn't play, and Ed Oliver was still dominant. Worst development, and we've talked about this several times, it's the Bills, how scary thin they are on the offensive line right now. I mean, again, Spencer Brown, they hoped he was going to be a swing tackle. He was prematurely forced into a starting role, and he's handled it well, but again, now he's got COVID. I hated Darrell Williams. Having to go back and forth. You know, he was a tackle last year. You move him into guard, you put Spencer Brown in right tackle, and I like that combination. But then somebody gets hurt, and now Darrell Williams has to swing back out to tackle, and I thought he was lousy against Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So I like him at guard. The fifth-round rookie, Tommy Doyle, he ain't ready to play tackle yet. Feliciano's hurt and didn't play great before that. We talked about that. Cody Ford, sorry, man, he's been terrible. Ike Bocker should be a depth guy. He's a regular starter now at left guard because Cody Ford's so bad. Guys like Bobby Hard and Forrest Lamp, they brought these veterans in for camp. Did not work out. Jamil Douglas is another one. He's only on the practice squad. So I think the Bills' offensive line and the thinness of it, they can't afford injuries or COVID. It's thin. To me, that's the worst development. Honorable mention, I know they had their moments against the Jets, and they've had a couple of moments throughout the year, but the Bills' running backs, whatever.
It's disappointing. Like they're not a running team. Like I think people have it. Right. A lot of people have it in their mind that like you need a running game. A friend of mine loves, I don't know if half of it's a meme, half of it's a joke, but he's always like, man, they got to run the ball more. And it's like pretty clear that they're not going to like running the ball is not their thing. The running back's there to help pick up blitzes. He's there to swing out of the backfield for passes. And he's there to occasionally offset things so Allen can do the play actions. But like, as far as like carrying the ball 20 times a game, that ain't happening, man. Like that, you know, you get Moss for your hard yards, you get Singletary to try to give you some speed yards, but they're getting like what, less than 2 yards a carry at this point. Short passing
some games they are, and games that they lose, they are. I mean, they pad their stats and they have good numbers against the Jets, but as a whole, it's tough to call that a worse development because as I'm reflecting, we didn't expect that much. I expected more from the Bills offensive line. And again, that's the worst development. Last two here, team MVP. That's going to be second. It's Josh Allen. It's got to be Josh Allen. His numbers, 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns, 66% completions, only 6 interceptions. He's got what? 322 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns. His stats, it doesn't feel that way because I think last year was such a pleasant surprise, whereas this year was an expectation. Mm-hmm. But I've looked at the numbers. I've seen them. They're incredibly on par with last year. He hasn't improved. He hasn't regressed from 2020. And considering he was an MVP caliber player last year, I'll sign up for that for the next 10 years. The way he's playing right now, I'll sign up for that for the next 10 years. And if he's not MVP, then who is? You know what I mean? So
the only other guy I'd pick is Diggs, honestly. Like Diggs is the other one because I think what we've seen the last few weeks is that this offense is a lot better when Allen's looking at Diggs. Because there was a couple of those, like the Jacksonville game, he barely went to, like, he finally went to Diggs in the fourth quarter and they started moving the ball. And you're like, where's this been? It's like, was he smothered covered? Like, I don't, like, we don't know. I'm not watching the all 22 tape. Forget that. Like I ain't doing that stuff, but like throw it to Diggs. Like your offense opens up so much more in the pass game.
Well, we saw it against the Jets. I mean, granted they're the Jets, but yeah, we saw it. They were going to him no matter what. I should also throw out too, this is half midseason awards. So Diggs still has 8 more games to build a strong case as well. All right. So I saved this one for last, defensive player of the year, not because it's like the most important one. Like MVP is always going to be normally last. The reason why I did this one last is because I got to create a little bit of drama here. It was the hardest one to pick. There's legitimately 4 or 5 candidates that you can make a strong case for defensive player of the year. Ultimately, I'm going with Jordan Poyer. I think he's been great. He's got 4 interceptions. That's just like one off from his career high already. He's got a sack, 4 tackles for a loss. And I'm not a big advanced stats guy, to be honest with you, but Joe from Queens pointed this out to me, and I took a look at it. He's number 1 in the entire NFL. Quarterback ratings thrown at him, the quarterback rating is only 42.9% or something like that. I saw this on Pro Football Reference Advanced Stats. Point being is he's dead first in the entire NFL in quarterbacks having the lowest rating thrown at him. By the way, there are other Bills
How many passes, though? That's
I'm not where, sure. I'm okay. not sure. I don't know that. But he's been fantastic. And it'll be a crime if he's not I know he's going to make the Pro Bowl if he's not all pro this year.
Everybody
but anyway,
makes the Pro Bowl.
Like I said, dude, I think Tremaine Edmonds has played. I mean, he's gotten slowed down with the injury, but I think he's finally played to his potential. I think he's been amazing. Mm-hmm. You can make a strong case for Taron Johnson, who I think is the best nickel corner in the NFL. Micah Hyde has been amazing. Trey White's been consistently good. Again, they don't throw at him a lot, and that's testament to him. Even Matt Milano, I mean, maybe now the injuries, he's missed a little bit too much time to be considered. Point and hell, don't let Oliver's name in there too, defensive player of the year. Again, he's been dominant for a lot of this season now. The Bills' defense is really good is what I'm getting at. Yeah. And this was a Jordan Poyer to me by a tiny margin over Taron Johnson is my defensive MVP right now.
I can't really have any fault with that. I mean, the defense, you're right. Take your pick of guys who have had outstanding years. And I think their secondary is really where most of their strength is at. I think what they do with the line is good, keeping guys fresh, rotating guys in and out, doing, because if you got 7-8 guys that you can run out there that you have confidence that can start, absolutely. Just, if you can keep fresh legs going at guys that are getting tired, that are getting ground down in the O-line, that's awesome. The linebackers are weird now because teams aren't, it's not like the 80s and 90s where you're running a 4-3 or a 3-4 and you need like 3-4 dominant linebackers. Bills have got 2 really good ones and that's really all they need. AJ Klein can step in there and be okay. But those guys play great. But the secondary is where the bread's buttered as far as I'm concerned, because any side of that field, anywhere the quarterback's going to throw, you've either got Poyer waiting underneath for him or Hyde, or you're throwing at Trey White. Good luck. Or you got Levy Wallace or you got Taron Johnson or one of those guys hanging around there. And it's like, okay, I don't like how any of that sets up at all. Like it makes throwing around very, very difficult.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I want to spend a couple minutes here talking Sabres, and we'll wrap up with our starting five. So we're taping this Thursday afternoon. So again, we can't talk about a Calgary game that, that hasn't happened. Who knows what the tone might be if we were taping this after that game. As the things stand now, 7-6-2 through 15 games. They're tied for fifth in the Atlantic. Dustin Tokarski, okay, 45 saves. I haven't watched, well, you know what? That's not true. I've watched a decent amount of the games this year, okay? More than typical. He was fucking phenomenal that game. It was like a Dominic Hasek game. Let me ask you this, and I almost feel like it's kind of like I'm making a joke, but I'm being like semi-serious. When it comes to this goalie, have the Sabres like caught lightning in a bottle with this guy, or is he just some, is he a journeyman who's just, you know, on a nice little run right now? Like, what are your thoughts on him?
I think it's more the latter. I think he's had a nice run here. That game against Pittsburgh, it's like I said, after the game, the team had better buy him everything he ever wanted as a thank you, because they spent the last 15 minutes of game time of that game was played in the Sabres end of the ice, and Pittsburgh probably should have scored four or five times with the plays that they had, because the whole period you're just like, well, here it comes. They're going to lose because Sabres been falling apart in third periods all year. They've had struggles in the third period, but you know, Tokarski played great. I think part of that is because, you know, that's a playing against your old team kind of pump up there, in Tokarski's case. But he's played very solid. I think it's a product of how well the team around him is playing as a unit, because they're getting bombarded with shots, and it wasn't like a thing where it's like, well, they keep blowing, like they weren't making mistakes. They weren't like causing their own turnovers and, you know, making things a little bit stressful. It was stressful because Pittsburgh was just like, screw this. We can't lose to these guys. Are you kidding me? It doesn't matter how many guys they got out, and you know, their coach has COVID and all this other stuff, but like, it didn't matter because they just flexed. Like Jeff Carter and Sidney Crosby still out there. You know, Sidney Crosby. Jeff Carter's one of the, you know, is a great goal scorer. Jake Guentzel, all those guys. Like, they're, it's good. Like, Pittsburgh's got their issues. But still, it felt like they put 25 shots into Karski in the last 15 minutes. And yeah, he held his ground. Like, he was on top of everything. Like, that's a focused performance, man. And, you know, kudos to him for doing it, because I think the thought coming out of camp was that he beats out Aaron Dell, which you're like, of course he did. You know, I hope he did, because Aaron Dell was awful in camp. But you're thinking like, boy, I hope he doesn't have to start too many games, you know, because it might get a little rough, because it got rough last year. You know, granted, different team, different setup, the whole thing. But no, you know, good for him. I'm not going to say like they caught lightning in a bottle. I ain't saying that.
No,
I ain't saying that yet, man. But
so you're not saying that 32 years old, that the guy's reborn, no, and he's going to have he's going to be the starting goalie, number one goalie for the next 7 years.
You get funny stories like that happen sometimes, but it's, yeah, but like they didn't find their number one starter accidentally here. But they just got a guy who's settled in a little bit, and like, that's good. Like, he hasn't, you know, he's never really gotten a shot in the NHL, which honestly didn't really deserve it considering how he played the minors. But like, hey, taking a run with it for what it's worth. That's what the Sabres season motto for like the end of the year video, which nobody creates any of those anymore, right, should be take it and run with it. We're just taking it and run with it. Enjoy it for what it is.
You know, the difference between this team and previous teams, I find myself personally, and I hope more people are like this as well. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to be honest with you. And this is a fucked up, it's a loser mentality. And I admit to it,
okay,
and I think maybe this team is just part of this losing culture that seems to have so long. I find myself, once I realize that they're not a playoff team, which usually is right away, mm-hmm, I root for them to lose. I continuously root for them to lose. I say, well, you know, they're not going to be in the playoffs anyway. Let's have one more year. Like, I could see somebody saying, you know, this team's a couple years away. And even if you feel, you know, better about the future, you still say, well, they're not good yet. How about one more year of getting a top five pick and this and that? That's been my attitude. It ain't no more. I want this team to win as many games as humanly possible, man. I don't care about draft pick consequence. I don't care if it takes them out of the Shane Wright sweepstakes realistically. I feel like you have these guys like Cousins and Mittelstadt and Dahlin, and I mean, I could go on and on and on. These guys need to experience as much winning as possible. Don't you feel that that is significantly more important, especially being around a losing culture? Well, not these guys have been around for a long time, but just this organizational is just, you know, they're losers, man. And winning as many games as they can right now, even if it costs you, if you're picking 12th instead of 3rd, winning's more important right now, even if you got no chance of making the playoffs. Am I right?
Yeah.
Or no?
No, you're totally right. And that cloud of, it's not even mediocrity, it's sub-mediocrity that's hung over everything, you know, since Darcy uttered the words, there's gotta be some suffering. Like that's been the cloud over top of everything for that long. That's kind of hung around. But I think to your point where you're just like, I don't care about number one picks, is that because you got like, you know, draft burnout at this point? I think at some point the fans reach that level where it's just like, I don't care about these picks anymore. Just give me some friggin' wins. Like it got that way in Edmonton, and then they won the McDavid lottery. So they're just kind of like, whoa, okay, see, it works out.
That's a great point. Jack Eichel, second overall pick, gone, traded. Sam Reinhart, second overall pick, gone, traded. Rasmus Dahlin, first overall pick, fourth year. Lots of criticism going on with this guy right now, which before we get to our 35 draft, I mean, we've talked about him a little bit. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing improvement in his play lately, or is it like just more of the same? All right. Is it legit worrisome yet, or should we have the mindset that, hey, man, the guy's still really young and he's still learning? Or do you feel like at this point he should be playing like not just a little bit better? Because, of course, he should be playing better. Should he be significantly better than he is right now? It seems like a lot of other good young defensemen are playing a lot better than he is.
I'm at the point with him where the question I ask now is, okay, what's going on here? Because for every good thing that I see him do, there's something where you're just kind of like, what the heck, man? Like, where's this coming from? Like, what is causing this? What's the glitch? What's making this happen? Because I think right now you could make an argument that of the six defensemen that they're rolling out every night, he's their worst one.
Wow.
And he's playing the most time. And I don't like saying that. I don't like saying that. But I see what Granato and his guys are doing. They're tinkering with trying to figure it out. Like, they're not just running them out there in the same situations every time, every night, just saying like, all right, let's, you know, eventually he's going to get it. They're doing different stuff. Like, you know, they put Mark Pezik with him. They're giving him more defensive zone starts as opposed to just keeping him in the O zone and saying like, all right, start here, get it going there. They're starting him in the D zone more, which I think is a way to kind of take the stress off him offensively. Cause I think there's a lot of pressure on him to just, you know, step up the offensive game and just go bananas. But his defensive game has been poor. So they're like, okay, let's try to find a way to kind of balance, you know, figure things out and try to get to the bottom of this. But of everybody out there, I mean, your best D pairing right now is Bryson and Miller without a doubt. I think for a while it was Hagan, Pesek, but like, you know, they're getting lesser matchups. They're playing fewer minutes. Like it's a little easier for them. I don't want to say it's easier, but like they're not getting the hard hours out there. You know, like they're getting things a little easier, but now it's Hague with Butcher, which it's fine. Like it's not as good as it was with Pesek, but like you put Pesek with Dahlin because you're thinking like, all right, Pesek's going to take care of, like Pesek's your solid veteran now. Like he's going to take care of his business and that's that. But Dahlin, he's been better, but like, it's still really like, come on, dude. Like what happened here? Like what's the deal? What's going on? And I think I talked about this with Chad before. I've talked about this with a couple other people. I think he just really needs a sports psychologist. Get out of your own damn head. You know, just get back, you know, get back to like what made hockey fun for you and try to get back into that headspace as opposed to I've got all the pressure in the world. I'm a number one pick. I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do this. Like you're out there, you start doing that kind of shit. And you're in your head constantly, and you cannot play hockey when you're thinking, which sounds crazy, but like you can't do it.
What you're saying, and I obviously put a lot of stock and value into your perspective on hockey things, especially, is that stats can be overrated. Because I'm telling you, man, if I didn't watch a second of a game this year, and I just did nothing but look at the stats, and I didn't follow it at all, and I'm not talking about the advanced metrics with stuff that majority of people have no clue, just your typical old school stats, and you look at Rasmus Dahlin, and you're like, all right, 15 games, 2 goals, 8 points, and he's a plus one on a very mediocre hockey team. You look at those stats, you'd be like, man, I'll sign up for that, but not really. You shouldn't sign up for that.
But also, like, how many of them have come on the power play? I think that's a big question, because you can get fat on power play stats. Like that's something that is a big deal. Like you can't be doing that. I'm just taking a quick look here.
Three of his 8 points are on the power play.
All right. So it's not bad. Yeah. I mean,
it's also these stats they're not symbolic of his defensive struggles, which is what you just spent a lot of time talking about, which has been the fatal flaw to this point anyway in his game.
And it's tough because there is I said this before the season, there's going to be a lot of attention paid to him because now he's the guy. Like he's the number one defenseman. Like he's got to play like it. And right now he hasn't played like it, which is difficult. Yeah. Especially when the team is performing better, honestly, and you're not seeing him go along with that. Like that's tough. Like you don't like seeing that, but just looking at like some graphs and stuff, I know people hate the graphs and whatever, like they think it's craziness, but
I want to hear what you're going to tell me before that though. a thought popped in my mind, man. That's a great conversation for us to have. I'm going to have you, I want to have Chad on at the same time sometime. We're going to have a nice discussion about educating simple-minded hockey folk like myself on what some of these stats are, but use one of them to illustrate your point. I know you're about to do that.
It's like I love seeing like the illustrated stuff because you get an idea of like where their impacts are. It's hockeyviz.com is a great site for that. You got to pay for it. Pay for it for 1 month just to check it out and get an idea of like what it is. But I look at Dahlin's numbers and like, his even strength offense, he helps generate a lot of offense in front of the net. Or maybe he's just not shooting a ton from out high. There's that part of it. Like there's a little bit that he's doing from like the top of the zone and, a little bit from the left circle, but defensively, the middle of the zone where that's where all the business is going to happen is, right in the slot area. But like, there's a little bit of red there, which you don't like on defense. You like it on offense. You don't like it on defense, but like on his side of the ice, kind of blue, you're not seeing the hard colors. You don't want the deep reds and blues you don't want the deep reds on defense and you don't want the deep blues on offense. Neither of them are there. He's just there. And I think when you're a number one pick, you need to be more than that. You need to be way more than that. So I think that's where it comes from. You don't want to, when you get a number one pick, you don't want to be like, well, he's a nice number three defenseman. That's not what you're looking for.
It's funny. It reminds me of Ed Oliver talk a lot where we say, Ed Oliver's been pretty good. He's been pretty goddamn good. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he would be great. If he was a third round pick, I'd be like, oh, man, Ed Oliver's a great football player. But when you're a top 10 pick, you need to be an impact player. You need to be a game changer. Yep. That's kind of like where we are right now. And again, room to grow. There is room to grow for Dahlin. But yeah, if he was a third round pick, a second round pick, this guy's good. But he's the first overall pick, a generational talent. Mm-hmm. And when you look at and when you factor that into what he's doing, then I could see where you would arrive at that.
And it's also because the comparisons change. If you're taking in the second and third round, you start looking at other second and third round guys that have gone there and you're like, wow, he's better than them. Instead, he's the number one pick. So he's getting compared to Erik Karlsson. He's getting compared to Victor Hedman. Hedman was a number two pick. Karlsson, he was like a mid first round pick, I think. I'm going way back. But like Karlsson at 21 years old scored 70 points. Dahlin's 21 right now. If he gets 70 points, holy shit, what a rest of the season he's having. Those are the kind of guys you're up against. You know, like, you know, Hedman's won the Norris the last 2 years. Like, Carlson's won a Norris. He's been, one of the, probably the best scoring defensemen of this current generation. Like, those are very, very high expectations, and it's tough, but you do need more out of them. You do need more. And like, I don't like saying that he's possibly their weakest link on defense, but I don't know, man. Like, it's hard because I look at the way some of these other guys are playing, and granted, their expectations are different than Dahlin's, but they're just performing better. Like, they're, you know, you're seeing better play out of them overall.
I have avoided starting five for as long as I possibly can. God. All right. So
are you
last
not happy
week,
about this one? I thought this was a great pick.
I'm not happy about last week. Last week we did Rock Bands, and Joe won 68%. What a shocker. I lose 32%. Let's recap the picks. Well, I'm gonna tell you why I'm pissed off. Anyway, Joe, 68%, the Rolling Stones, the Who, Led Zeppelin, Metallica, Nirvana. That's about as flawless as a lineup as you can get. I don't have a problem with losing, by the way. I had 32%. I have the Beatles, Queen, Van Halen, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and U2. Here's why I'm mad. And myself.
Is it U2?
I fished for votes last week by picking U2. I fished for votes. I did. I admitted that. I've never done that. I've gotten pummeled in some of these polls. I've won a poll here and there. But I've always stayed true to picks that I like. I don't even like U2 that much, man. I fished for votes. I figured they would be popular and a lot of people would vote for them. And I got pummeled for it, and rightfully so, by the way.
You forgot that they crammed an album on everybody's iTunes that everybody was like, what the hell, man? Come on.
I respect U2. They've been around for a long time. They've been making good music for a long time. But to consider them amongst the top 5 or 10 best rock bands ever is a fucking joke. All right, it was a joke. And shame on Sal Capaccio and shame on Sal Mariano, these big U2 fans, because I was thinking of them in my mind when I made this pick. It was a horrible pick, one that I didn't believe in. And again, I rightfully got pummeled for it. I deserve what I got.
You did. You sold your soul for rock and roll, and you came up short.
I will stand by, though. Van Halen, especially. Yeah, Van Halen, I totally stand by. And I'll tell you, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, I don't know if it was a good or bad pick because nobody even mentioned them. I think maybe it's because people were so annoyed by U2 that they used their 280 characters to bitch about that pick and didn't even mention Tom Petty. I have no idea what that feedback was.
I will say I was annoyed that somebody who responded to our poll said that they didn't like my pick of Nirvana because of longevity. And I was like, are you fucking serious? They changed everything about music in the 90s by showing up on the scene. And they weren't around long enough. I was like, it's their fault that Kurt Cobain had problems. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Sure. Okay, pal. Whatever. They only made like 3 albums. They're the 3 biggest albums of the 90s. Shut up.
I get annoyed when people say, and I've come to accept it and understand. I come to accept that there's some people who are going to vote on the poll and have their comments, but don't actually end up listening to the show. I get annoyed when some people say, how do you not pick or mention this? When we literally will sit there and have a conversation about why we almost picked this group or why we didn't pick this group, you know, but whatever, it is what it is. So this week we're going to do TV talk show hosts. And so we're clear, it's not necessarily late night TV talk show hosts. It's not daytime TV talk show hosts. It's just TV talk show hosts. And I'm also going to be honest with you and say, give prefaces by saying something. This is probably I don't want to say I've mailed this weekend. I haven't even picked yet, but I usually get really excited whether they work out or not. I usually get really excited about our topics. I think we do a good job of picking fun topics. I'm not really excited about this one. I mean, I'm going to plow through. I'm going to be professional. No, okay. I'm a professional here, but
I think that means you're going to win this week because you don't care about it.
maybe. My point is this: is I usually have a lot of, I don't always articulate it well, but I always have a lot of like animated thoughts in my mind anyway about why I want to pick this one or you know how this is going to go. Not really the case with this, but anyway, you know what? I'm looking. You actually had the first pick last week, which I thought was kind of surprising. You took the Rolling Stones over the Beatles, and it worked. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it worked out for you. So it was a good pick, man. Good pick. That's going to put me first here. All right. Well, then this one's easy for me. I thought you had the first pick. It's not until I just looked now and realized it.
So this changes your strategy.
No, it don't change my strategy because, he's a clear number one on my board. It's David Letterman. I've always been a big David Letterman fan. I remember watching him on NBC after Johnny Carson. I became a fan of his. He's one of the few late night TV talk. And honestly, look, at this point, I'm either sleeping or not watching. So I'm not going to lie and say I stay up and wait for these shows now. But there was a time where he was worth staying up for. The Stupid Human Tricks, he just brought a different type of interview in segments to his show than all the others that I had seen on late night. So again, I'm not going to overanalyze it. He's an easy number one for me.
I was hoping you were not going to take David Letterman because I was going to run away. I was going to run away and grab him and call it a day. I'm going to go with Conan O'Brien.
Okay.
Good Conan, one. There was nobody who got screwed harder by Jay Leno than Conan O'Brien did. Like David Letterman got screwed by Jay Leno too, they made a whole HBO movie about that, but
which I saw. Yeah.
Which is as weird as it is. It's actually pretty, pretty informative, but man, did Leno screw Conan over so bad. This is, by the way, this is me tipping off. I'm never picking Jay Leno. So just so you're aware, I'm never picking Jay Leno. So if he's on your board, go ahead and take him.
He ain't. All right.
But I got to take Conan. I got to take Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Now, listen, that makes me sound very old by saying that. And I was a kid when he wrapped it up. Like, I was young. I was barely able to, like, I don't think I was allowed to stay up that late too much. Mm-hmm. But like, you go back and watch some of the interviews that he did with people. And oh my God, the guy just, you understand why everybody who hosted a late night talk show was like, Johnny's the man. Like, you cannot cross Johnny. Johnny is perfect. And Johnny was perfect because, my God, man, like, what a show that was. And I just, it blows me away that somebody was that good at it. And he did it for decades, man. He was just so good. So, yeah, Johnny.
I want to look, Johnny Carson was number two on my list, by the way. So, if again, I was planning on taking him because I thought you were one and you would take Letterman. About Conan O'Brien, too. What a comeback. You're right, man. He got screwed over, and you would have thought that might have been in the end of the road for him. And then he goes to like TBS or some shit eventually. Well, that was years later or whatever, but what a good run he had on there. One of the more, and plus he has a great podcast. It's still going right now. Yeah. It's one of the few, the comedian ones that I actually listen to. Mm-hmm. Great pick on O'Brien. He was very high on my list. So I'm really surprised that you took him that high because I was going to take him high too. He was number four on my list.
Conan was my wheelhouse, man. Yeah. Like that's a show that I basically grew up with, like being a night owl at night and then watching it at 12:30. And then he goes and he gets the late night show or he gets a better show. And you're just like, oh man, this rules.
All right. I got two here. First one's mainstream one. Oprah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Cheesy and corny, whatever. I watched Oprah. It was on 4 p.m. CBS on weekdays. I don't want to say she's one of the best interviewers ever, but she's certainly one of the most famous people ever.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who was anybody came on that show. And it was, whether it was musicians, artists, whoever it may be, the most famous people came on her show. And I like seeing famous people get interviewed. Now, I know I got a feeling, but by the way, that might not play that well, but whatever. I'm good with that pick. And the other one, Jon Stewart, The Daily Show.
Yeah.
Loved Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. He was there for that. I didn't realize he was there for as long as he was. He was there for like 15 years. One of my favorite interviewers, one of my favorite TV shows. And that was a TV talk show. I mean, he had panel guests. He had other people on the show. So that makes it eligible. I feel, again, I don't know how he's going to play with a crowd. And I'm not going to sit there and give you this this novel on why I picked some of these guys or women. Mm-hmm. But I like Jon Stewart. So I'm picking him. I tried to hide one, by the way. And I'm really going to be mad if I don't get it because I wanted to take this person with this last pick, but took Jon Stewart and said, you're on the clock for two.
Yeah. I'm wondering who you're trying to hide.
Well, I'll let you know. You'll know.
Well, yeah. If I don't pick him, I'm definitely going to know. Well, if I do pick him, you're going to be really pissed.
You're going to know one way or the other.
This is where things get a little fuzzy. Cause I think the top four or five is probably kind of unassailable, honestly. Like, especially since we're cutting out Jay Leno, it's just, you know, we're just like, we're both like, fuck Jay Leno. Like, who cares?
Right.
I'm going to go, it's more new school, I guess. And I guess it's more out of the Jon Stewart level of things. I'm going John Oliver.
Okay.
On HBO. The way he's able to just cut things down to size and be really funny about it and very direct.
He's great.
Which is good, is super. And like that whole show is really fun to watch. But when he's, you know, when he's dug in and he goes off on his things, oh man, there's nobody I want less to be on the other side of a rant than John Oliver. I think that would be a nightmare.
That's a
if
good
I
pick.
Turned on that show and like John Oliver's going off on me, I'd be like, oh Christ, what did I do?
Yeah.
I screwed up.
That's a good
up.
Pick. That's a nice sleepy pick. I like it.
And I think this is another good sleepy pick. Craig Ferguson.
Okay.
That was another like ultra late night show where it was weird. It was a little weird. I mean, he had like a robot, you know, co-host essentially. And he took it very casually. His humor, you know, if you're not into a Scottish guy kind of cutting jokes and being very Scottish at times, it might be a little tricky. But man, nobody could do an interview and make somebody just be like chill the way Craig Ferguson could and just like get me to laugh huge at what he's doing. Because I think of the way Conan does an interview where he's there to kind of play the straight man. You know, if you know, he's there to kind of set you up to do what you want to do. Craig Ferguson's there to kind of like yuck it up with you. He'll be the straight man, but he'll also like zing you too. Like that's that kind of ability to do an interview is great. And going back and watching some interviews that he's done again, it's just so you just watch it. You're like, man, how'd this guy not end up getting like a bigger show out of this? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I liked him. I enjoyed him. When I said he's not on my list, he was on my list, but he wasn't who I was talking about. All right. So I got my last two here.
So you got your guy.
I could have taken, I got my guy. I feel like I gambled.
Girl. I don't know.
No, it's a guy. And I gambled. I could have taken him with my second pick, to be honest with you, man. I liked him that much, or that show anyway, that much. It was only on for 5 years, but it was at the height of my love for R&B music. It's Arsenio Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, I vividly remember this shit, man. Yeah, that was during the time where like Johnny Carson was on the Tonight Show. He was wrapping up. And then it became Jay Leno, who we agree. We didn't pre-talk, so I didn't know that we both kind of have a disdain for Jay Leno. But point being is the musical acts that were on there weren't the music. As an R&B guy who in the early 90s loved groups like Jodeci and R. Kelly and Babyface and Boyz II Men and all these groups, Arsenio Hall had the black R&B singers on there where they weren't on anywhere else. To me, I absolutely loved that show. The comedians, it was just a great show. Plus, he was a pretty good interviewer, and he's funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could have taken him second, and I hit him, and I got lucky. So I'll tell you, if I go down with Arsenio Hall, I'll go down that chip every time. I love
it. I would own it. I would own it in that case. I'd just be like, listen, if you hate me for that, then fine.
I loved it. Enjoy it. It was a great place for black artists to go on, where, again, they weren't only the most famous ones would be going on Johnny Carson and shit like that. So that's one. And then my last pick, I'm going to go, I'm going to go Larry King. He was the only reason in the 90s I would ever put CNN on. I didn't give a shit about the news. And I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I watch a lot of Larry King live. You know what I mean? But I did. I mean, I saw a lot of his interviews. He used to have a lot of wrestlers on. And he was one of the first, at least that I could personally remember, where he would have a guest. And then he would also take calls from viewers who were watching. So I thought that was pretty cool. Again, I'm not like the biggest fan in the world of Larry King, but I feel good enough for being the last pick to have him. So yeah, that's my five, man.
That's I have zero issue with either of those. Cause I honestly was eyeballing Larry King too. Cause I just, again, I think of interviews and Larry King just always had the just unbelievable interviews and like people would expressly go to him saying, you know, I got stuff to say. Let me talk with him. Mm-hmm. Like that was the thing with him. See, doing all this makes me sad though, because it makes me think of the shows that are on now, like the late night shows now, and they're all like different levels of disappointing. Like, Jimmy Kimmel, like He's fine. Jimmy Fallon stinks. I don't like Jimmy Fallon at all. Stephen Colbert show is fine, I guess. Like, I don't know, man.
I never thought he was as funny as Jon Stewart.
No, and his humor's, I mean, it's weird because like on Comedy Central, he was great. And then he went to CBS and suddenly that show aged about 40 years, which was like, what? Like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
See, but now I'm in a funny spot because this is where the sleaze comes out, I think. Because we can't talk about talk shows without getting into the muck.
Right. I completely agree. I had a feeling you were going in this direction. I would too, and I 100% agree. And to your point, while you're contemplating, to your point about Jimmy Fallon, I also agree. I'm surprised. I thought you would have liked him a lot. I don't think he's that good either. He's good with skits. Like, they have skits on his show that he does with people, or he does some musical stuff. But in terms of conversations, meh. But the mucky stuff, go ahead, because I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't think we can really do this without saying Jerry Springer. I mean, there are other guys that were before him that kind of got into this sort of stuff. Like Geraldo Rivera, I think, is the OG of that. Because I think the original Geraldo show was the original controversial talk show, and you know, where you'd have like Nazis on there, or you'd have like, you know, just all sorts of like crazy shit. And you're just like, what the hell's going on with this country? Geraldo's got them all on there. But like him and Morton Downey Jr., I don't know if you remember.
I do.
Morton Downey Jr. show.
I do.
That was an insane asylum of a show. Like, his crowd was
smoking cigarettes. Yep. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, like screaming at people. His crowd is insane. And you're just like, what the hell's even going on here? Like, that guy was like huge for a hot second. But like, Jerry Springer took it to like a whole different depth. I can't say it's a new level, because like cult, level cult makes following. Me think hot.
Cult but following.
It's huge cult following. And find me somebody who never watched Jerry Springer, knows Jerry Springer, knows the circus sideshow that is Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
The stuff on his show is not believable. It's all phony. It's all caricature, like everything about it. And if it is real, good Lord, find some help for these people, because Jesus. But yeah. I know it's like some of these shows are so trashy, they're funny. Like the Maury show, hilarious. Especially when he's doing like the paternity test shit. Like,
right.
I don't know why that's funny. Like, it's awful that it's funny. And like, that's saying a lot about me as a human being, that I'm just kind of like, wow, let's see how this goes. Like, no, I don't need that circus. I don't need that circus sideshow.
Jerry knew what he was. He knew what his show was.
100% knew what he was. And he knew what he was doing. He knew the buttons he was pushing. He's the ultimate ringmaster. I mean, that's the name of his friggin' movie, Ringmaster. But like, it's what he was. Like, he was the head of the circus, and he was bringing the freaks out. And it's 100% what he did.
I think we both, well, according to my list anyway, that I had, we stuck to it. The only one I didn't have on my personal top 10 was Craig Ferguson, but he could have easily been. John Oliver, I think, is a really good sneaky pick. I had Jerry Springer on my list for all the reasons that you said. You can't have 10, you can't have 10 selections and not honor the muck. And then it comes down to me anyway, it was Springer or Maury Povich. And I personally was a Springer guy. You know, it's just, I watched the show. He is one of those most recognizable people too. It's like when you, like a lot of people who don't even watch wrestling, but there's a handful of wrestlers where they're instantly recognizable, whether you watch wrestling or not. That's how it is with Jerry Springer. You know the Jerry Springer show, whether you want to admit it or whether you don't. A couple that neither of us picked. Phil Donahue was a pretty popular name. I'm looking at Ellen DeGeneres, which I'm not a big fan of Ellen. I mean, she does a lot of cool shit during the daytime stuff.
But, she did for a little bit, but then it got to be like weird, especially now that we found out that she's a monster to the people that work for her. So it's like, all right, that's enough.
Ricky Lake was another one too. I kind of liked Ricky Lake a little bit, man. So
that was a softer version of Jerry Springer.
I agree. If I was forced to pick one of the current ones, I probably would have picked Jimmy Kimmel. I'm more entertained, not because I think he's amazing, but I think he's better than Fallon or better than Stephen Colbert. So I would have picked him if I had to pick one. All right, let's recap these. I got David Letterman, Oprah, Jon Stewart, Arsenio Hall, Larry King. Joe took Conan O'Brien, Johnny Carson, John Oliver, Craig Ferguson, Jerry Springer. honestly, this could be a tight one, man. I feel good.
I think you got the edge. I really do.
We've only had two close votes. So it's, you know what I mean?
I can see this one being a 60-40 for you.
Yeah, honestly. Is that what you think?
Yeah, I think it could be. Because I think people are going to see Letterman because Letterman's the best.
Yeah, ever. I think he's
and
like
then Oprah, I think. Yeah. I think enough people have forgotten that Oprah had a talk show. Like, people know the memes, like the bees meme that you see all the time. Like people see that and they're just kind of like, oh yeah, Oprah, okay. But like she's such a huge entity now that like you don't even think about the talk show anymore.
Yeah, I think for sure Letterman is. I think he could have that kind of impact that like Tony Soprano had when we did HBO stuff, you know, or The Sopranos.
That's why I had to take Carson. That's why I had to take Johnny. Even though, like, I mean, listen, I was taking Johnny no matter what, but like, that's the only guy that can counter to Letterman, in my opinion. Like, that's the only guy I think on any of our list that could really hang in with Letterman and possibly outdo Letterman. I think Johnny might be old enough so that enough people on Twitter are going to be like, who the hell's Johnny Carson?
We'll see. Well, anyway, this will be up. You're listening hopefully Friday morning. This will be up on both our Twitters. Follow me at @PatMoranTweets. Of course, follow Joe on Twitter at Joe Yurden. Check out Noted Hockey on Substack. I'll put a link in the show notes, and it's also in Joe's bio on his Twitter. All right, well, this draft was more fun than I thought. Good talk, man. Good talk again. We will be back not next Friday, but next Wednesday for Casual Wednesday. Thanks as always, Brody. This was fun, man.
Yeah, it was a good time. And always, it's fun on Casual Friday.